Welcome to the American Scene program, folks. 25 years on the air. It's great to have you here now in year 26. Very special guest today, Peter Grandich. I haven't interviewed him for a long time, but we're renewed friendship once again. Well, I met Peter Grandich back more than 25 years ago. I referred to him on Good Morning America and our bevy of 100 stations as Wall Street's whiz kid. He was then and he is now, but we're both quite a bit older, of course, and he's got a little bit of a career change going on now. He's written a great book, which is available on Amazon.com, and you want to go to his website, petergrandich.com. Let me spell that for you, G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H, Grandich, just like Grand Rich without the R. And it's great to have Peter Grandich joining us on our live line. Peter, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you back again.
Yeah, it was 26 years in the making, so I was glad to make it back.
26 years in the making. You were a young guy, and were you actually working on Wall Street at that time or just in the New York, New Jersey area?
In New York, New Jersey area, worked for a New York Stock Exchange firm, and what actually happened was I had forecast the crash in 87 in October, and then forecast and rally to a new high. You somehow got hold of it interviewed me for Good Morning America and then called me the Wall Street Whiz Kid, and I've been milking it ever since.
That's great. Well, you know, the reason we called you the Wall Street Whiz Kid is you had a lot of success early on in your career, and you became quite famous early on in your career. I think I was just kind of glomming on top of that, but you were calling the shots pretty accurately, Peter.
Yeah, it was. It was a fast pace, and what was unusual about it was, you know, not even being a high school grad, but most of the guys on Wall Street are Wharton School and Harvard.
Right,
and
right.
To come out of the gate like that in the first few years and have success and end up managing hedge funds and a mutual fund, yeah, it is an unusual story, to say the least.
Well, how did you pick up on all that knowledge early on without having a complete education? Did you just learn as you went?
I used to think I was a legend in my own mind at one time.
Right.
But after I left the Me, Myself, and I Society, I concluded that I was too naive at that point to think I was even half as smart as I thought I was.
Right.
I believe it was all of a plan, and to be really frank, it was a plan of the good Lord who had things, you know, to come for me, and we share in the book. But I was just, you know, 3 years in the business to be head of investment strategy and forecast the crash and end up on programs such as yourself. I mean, that's very unusual, and I believe God's hand was in it, quite frankly.
Sure, and you're a professed Christian. You talk about that all the time, and you believe that's really helped you in your career, right?
Correct, and without it, I would have not gone through the very deep valleys that included making and losing millions, suffering serious depression twice, things that aren't normally talked about on Wall Street, but unfortunately many people have that. But through all that, I believe this has been a trial that God has placed me, maybe even to be here today just speaking to you about it.
Right. I believe the same thing, too. I believe the reason you called me was God was in it. We call these things God setups, don't we?
Yeah, and, we don't think at the time because it can get very dark, but he's there 24/7. It may not feel that way, but I can certainly attest to it. And I know without him, I would not be where I am today.
That's right. That's right. We're talking to Peter Grandich, by the way. Very special interview. Very special guy. You can go to his website, Peter Grandich, G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H, petergrandich.com, one word. I want to talk a little bit about the book because I did read the book cover to cover. You know, sometimes people will send you a book and you'll skim through it and see what you can pick out of it. But yours I did read cover to cover. I really enjoyed the book. I thought, Peter, it was an exceptional book in terms of telling it straight about your life, your life's lessons, the good, the bad, the in-between. And I really couldn't put the book down once I started. I was sitting on our back deck, which it was about 75 degrees because we live in South Florida, and had the sun shining on me. And I read the book mostly outdoors. But what a great book it is. And I want to encourage our listeners to get that book, you know, and read it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. B, it's something that many people say, as you just said. And I really think, again, because of the trials and tribulations and what I share, what I believe is the truths of Wall Street that aren't told in the book, I really believe God allowed me to go through these trials and be willing to speak about that and acknowledge, you know, the many mistakes that I made, including making and losing money. Like I said, I was turning the Ten Commandments into the Ten Suggestions, And
I love it.
Unfortunately, but fortunately, God saw me through it, and now I'm able to share it. And Confessions of a Wall Street Whiz Kid,
right,
which is in its third edition. And I must tell you, I did change the name briefly for the third edition. It's now called The Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. And the reason I did, Steve, is I just don't believe anybody who can make and lose money should call himself a whiz kid, as much as I appreciate you did 26 years ago. But also the fact that no one knows the future but God, so I don't want to be perceived as somebody all-knowing.
Well, as I was reading the book, I was surprised to see my name popping up in the book, you know?
Well, I had to give you the credit. That's where it came. I had to tell the story about it. And it was, and you know, I have to tell you, you were the first national prominent media person to speak about it and share that. And it took me 26 years to call you up and say thank you.
Well, thank you. And, you know, Good Morning America back then had about 3 million viewers, but our syndication, our Daily Money Report on 100-plus stations had 30 million viewers. So a lot of people would look down their nose at our syndication. It was, in fact, in terms of viewership back then on all the best stations in every market, it was 10 times as powerful as Good Morning America, you know?
Yeah, and we had it here on our ABC affiliated, and it was always good work. And again, just to put a lid on it, I'll just say, and for all your viewers, it was a tremendous gift that you gave us, and I'm very thankful for it.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about the present day, because a lot of people are scared. You know, starting in 2008, 2009, a lot of individual smaller investors got shocked. Their 401ks went way down, becoming 201ks, as they joke about. And a lot of people, we had a retired college professor working for us, and he and his wife had put away enough in retirement savings to really live out a good retirement. I believe his retirement savings went from like $450,000 down to like $120,000 and really shocked them, and they both went back to work in their early 80s, you know?
Yeah, and unfortunately, that is a story that's all too common, and many times it doesn't have to take a financial crisis to happen. Part of that is Wall Street tends to be too aggressive. You know, they created a word called speculation, but that was so they didn't have to use the real word, which it describes, and that's gambling. And most people, particularly as they get into their older years, should eliminate all forms of gambling. And even if it means eliminating a lot of potential upside, but you really need to learn to protect your principal more. And that's just something, one of the many bad habits that Wall Street doesn't do for the public in general.
All right, but what do you do when your savings pays less than 1% or so? You know, what do you do about that?
Well, you know, there's a lot to that. And sometimes, and it's been a market that seemingly has been one way, but many times, and I think this is one of them, and that's why we called 2016 the year to pay the piper, this is where actually not losing money is going to be a gain. And so it doesn't have to always be trying to make money. But it's part of the problem also over the last 20 years of what the Federal Reserve did by creating this enormous printing press and lowering interest rates next to nothing. They have really hurt the fixed income retirement generation, and they forced them into far more riskier products that we're now seeing them tipping over and going to cause even a more problem. The classic one is what we call high-yield bond funds, but that replaced the real word of junk bond funds. So much money from retirees and people depending on income went into those type of funds that they became so overbought, these corporate bonds, that now, especially since so many of them went into like oil plays and things of that nature, there's dangers of those bonds not being able to pay. And people in fixed income should never be in things where the principal is in danger of not being paid back.
That's right. You know, I wanted to give a little story here. The guy that I go to have my hair cut, he's somewhere halfway between a barber and a hairdresser, I guess. But he has built his entire wealth on buying consistently month in and month out Apple stocks. And I think he started about 12, 15 years ago and amassed a lot of money through doing that. Now, a guy like that, as Apple went up to, what, 125 or something, now it's 100. I mean, in a very short order, he lost about a fifth of his life savings. Is that meaningful?
Well, I've made the terrible mistake more than once myself, putting a lot of my eggs in one basket. I've also witnessed what happens, Steve, especially people that work at big corporations, and I'm just taking IBM as an example. It becomes family, so it's very natural for them to put a lot of their money into the company stock. But so many that done that, we can spend the rest of the time of the interview just peeling off companies that were once great names and then lost most, if not all, their equity values.
Right.
It's very dangerous to put so much money into any one play. And yes, Apple looks like the darling of darlings now, but so did Kodak at one time. And, you know, there's a whole lot of others that look that regard. And that's the big concern of putting all our eggs in one basket. I really think it's a no-no, and I'm an expert to know that it's a no-no.
Well, Kodak, for example, invented digital photography and let it slip right through their hands, you know?
Yeah, and there's more stories like that. And again, that's where One Word Wall Street does toss around that is worthy to listen to, and that's diversification. I do think we need to be diversified, especially since we're no longer separate countries. This has become one big global economy. We're seeing that now. We're seeing where China, Brazil, the BRIC, what we used to call the BRIC, which a few years ago everybody on Wall Street was telling everybody they had to invest in, the Brazil,
right.
The Russian, the India, the China.
Yeah.
They're all peeling off. They're all being impacted by one another. So you have to be very diversified. So owning any one stock or really any one country really is not a good thing to do anymore.
Do you like mutual funds and or ETFs?
Well, I've come to the conclusion, hey, look, 80%, these are Nobel laureate studies. These aren't, you know, financial guys that did it. Nobel laureates have concluded that 80% of money managers in equity and 85% in bond funds underperform low-cost index funds. And the 20% that do beat it one year, almost none of them repeat the next year. So, A, I'm never going to be on that regular part of that 20%. So I've come to the conclusion that for most people, and particularly the people I deal with and for myself, low-cost index funds are the simplest and best way to go. We just had another study come out this week that showed that you would be better off flipping a coin than listening to the folks that appear on a lot of these talking head shows.
Right.
So, again, I think at this point in my life and what I've experienced over 32 years in the business, for the most people, not everybody, but for the vast majority, low-cost index funds in the equity market is good enough. I don't believe that there's you know, Steve, you and I have been around about the same time, and the guy that was famous in the 80s, we can't remember his name anymore. So for a few years, somebody's great market timer,
right.
And then suddenly they disappear. I just don't believe for 95% or 99% of the public that they should be trying to time the market.
Joe Granville, right?
Well, there's a name that's right. In fact, in my early years, when people heard Grandish, they thought they were thinking of Granville.
That's
so
right.
That was pretty good. I forgot about Joe Granville.
That's right. A lot of us have. Well, it's fascinating stuff. You know, one of the reasons I respect Investors Business Daily is they will actually tell people in a market rout to get out of stocks. That's hard to believe, but they really do tell them that. And, of course, they've got the IBD 50. The point I wanted to make here, Peter, is that a lot of people don't believe. Let's take stocks like high-flying stocks like Chipotle and Lululemon and a lot of other ones that have been high-flying for the past 2 years. These stocks can actually retrace their previous lows. I mean, it is possible.
Oh, not only is it possible, it's probable. When the average increase in equities is less than 10% on average, so if you have 110% a year or 210% a year, chances are that's not going to continue to do that, and sometimes they have to average out. So a lot of these high flyers and the names that people were chasing in the last few years, probably if we have a discussion and the good Lord keeps us long enough alive to see it in the next 2 years, we'll be talking about they are on percentage-wise more down than, say, some of the more, you know, conservative-type stocks. And that's always been the way, and I don't think it's ever going to change.
So what's your advice to individual investors right now at this point? I mean, we've seen oil go down to 23, 24, and then snap back up into the 30 range. What kind of a global slowdown do you see happening in 20? Forgetting about the market for a minute, what kind of a global kind of GDP slowdown do you see happening this year?
My overall opinion is this: America has been robbing Peter to pay Paul, and Peter's tapped out.
So, okay, right.
So the first thing is, we have spent our future and our children's future. It's going to take a generation or more before we can get back to levels that we just incurred so much debt. These QE programs that people have heard of that have created trillions of dollars, there's a cost in them. And that is really what's weighted us down. And what bothers me most, not only in the United States but throughout the Western world, central bankers have continued to print money to try to fix a debt problem. Nowhere in history has any debt problems ever been fixed by creating more debt. So the biggest single problem for America and Americans themselves is too much debt. And that comes from something, Steve, that I've called the public storage fiasco. And people, I don't mean to pick on the people that own public storage facilities, but just a generation ago, your parents and mine, they never owned or have to pay somebody to keep something in a building down the block from where they lived. America's problem is rooted in we have too much stuff. We've gotten used to too much stuff. We've also gotten used to too much entitlements we think that we're entitled to. And these are structural problems that are not going to be fixed in a year or even a cycle. And now they're finally, after kicking that can down the road and getting harder and harder to kick it, we've run out of room to kick the can. And there's a price to pay. And that's why I felt this year was going to be what I called the beginning, of the biggest economic, social, and political upheaval America's
right.
ever seen, and
right.
I believe it's begun.
Well, we've also created a generation or two of people that want to be on the government dole, or partly so. You know, your point about having too much stuff, the late comedian George Carlin did a great routine about having too much stuff, and if we go on vacation, we take some of our stuff, and then if somebody invites us over to their house, we pack a bag and take some more stuff down, less stuff. And, you know, he really harped on that Americans are fixated on just gathering all kinds of possessions, which they may or may not use. And we've seen these hoarders, right? These houses full of stuff. They can't get rid of the stuff.
Steve, I actually used that video in our 2016 report. I actually link to George Collins' routine.
Did you?
In that.
Good.
And it's very, very valid. And it is. And the other thing that's very important, and I also used the link in our report, is a professor a couple years ago came in and became very popular, went viral and all, and he talked about pulling the wagon, that more and more people are getting mm-hmm. in the wagon, and less people are pulling the wagon, and this current administration was punishing the people who were pulling the wagon, not giving them a helper and thanking them for pulling more and more people in the wagon. And that's another problem and all. So this is just not a time, I think, that people should be, you know, really being aggressive and really taking chances. I really believe less is more, not only from what we just discussed about
yep.
possessions and all, but just the way we live our life and even the way we approach the financial markets. And it's not going to be so much of how much you don't make, but that you prevent yourself from losing that I think is important.
Well, there's so much more I want to talk to you about, Peter, but we're running out of time here. But I want to invite you back in 2 or 3 weeks, and let's pick up on this discussion. I want to hear about what he's going to be doing for the balance of this year and his life, what he'd like to be doing, because he's changing things slightly. And also want to learn more about gold and silver and a lot of his takes on politics and the markets and world economies and all of it. PeterGrandage.com. Give us the title of that book once again, Peter.
It's now called Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. It's the third edition, so if you go on Amazon.com, don't buy the second or the first, buy the third edition.
Right.
And again, it's Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid.
That's great, folks. One of my dear friends has come back into my life here, Peter Grandage, PeterGrandage.com. Buy his book, read it. You're going to love it. Great book, great book. Buy one for yourself and buy one for your kids. It's a fun book to read. Peter, we'll talk to you very, very soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Have a great day there in the New Jersey area. We'll take a short break here on the American Scene program. That is Peter Grandage, PeterGrandage.com. We'll be right back.